Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you once again for the opportunity to introduce our speaker, John DeCosta, and Mark Waller and I. Bill Koresh needs to know this. We have our strategic plan. Every few months they call me and ask me if I know someone who'd be a great speaker for Rotary. And we have one today. His name is Hans Witt. Hans was born in Hamburg, went to school at the University of Hamburg, business degree, and then went to University of Brunswick and became a computer scientist. He then went to work after he graduated and worked at Volkswagen, NCR, and IBM. And in the German society, they have a pecking order, a seniority thing that was not going to be working for Hans, and for one of Hans's bosses, who was working at NCR, decided he was going to go to Datapoint. Shortly thereafter, Hans was invited to come to Datapoint to be interviewed for a new position. Hans arrived in Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. His former boss and friend was there waiting for him in a red Corvette with the top down, a short case of beer, and a couple of doobies. Hans said, "Yahoo, I'm staying here." He went to work. Shortly thereafter, he met his wife, Linda, and they decided they were going to go on the Inland Passage to go on a cruise. After the cruise was over, Hans said, "Linda, I'm going to go over to Microsoft," where they had a building and a half and 300 or 400 employees, and said, "I'm going to interview with these folks to see if I might be able to find a job." Linda said, "Why would you want to go to work there? You're going to take a huge pay cut." He went there and spent the day with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, and at the end of the day, they asked Hans if he'd like to go to work there. And Hans said, "Yes, I'm ready to go. Linda, go home and sell our home in San Antonio. I'm going to go to work." That was 1986. Hans worked there until 1996, when his parents came from Hamburg and said, "I think you're working a little bit too hard." Hans took a few years off, and then he was sitting at the airport again in Dallas, and Andy Grove of Intel said, "Hans, I need you in Portland." Hans said, "Why would I want to move from Kirkland to Portland, Oregon?" So they cut a deal several years ago. Hans now lives in Portland and has for a number of years. He worked at Intel for 3 years, took a few years off, went sailing down in Australia, New Zealand with America's Cup boats as a sponsor. And then he got involved in Haley Systems in Pittsburgh and traveled back and forth from coast to coast for a number of years until he sold the company to Oracle. His wife found me at a French-American school auction and said, "I'd like to introduce you to Hans Witt." Hans now is the COO of Atensa, a company that many of us know very, very well. And Hans has been giving a number of talks about autonomous self-driving cars. And I'll tell you, he knows a lot about it. Let's welcome Hans Witt.
Okay. Thank you, Terry, very much. Thank you, Craig, for having me. Thank you, Rotarians, to be here. The one part is always tough to follow Terry after those introductions. You know, it can only go worse after this. So what I want to talk to you about is really autonomous mobility. I'm staying away from saying autonomous cars because it's really about mobility, because what will drive you in the future will not look like a car that you know it today. So that's what we're doing. To show about a part, what I did to define this talk is really, I could talk 2.5 hours about this, so 20 minutes is very short. To cram everything in would not be good. So I thought, I let you pick a number and I talk about this. So you have the numbers 1 through 9. And I also put a number 9 in there with a stop sign. Whenever you call the number 9, it could be the first number I will stop my talk. However, what I ask you, when you do this, please stand up loud and clearly, state your name, email address, and phone number. Okay. So this said, number.
One. One.
Four.
Six.
One. Six.
Five.
No, no, I still have to say them, but what I pick. Okay, four. About the future of mobility. And that's a very interesting part because it really deals about the future of travel, what we do, and a lot of things has to do the transition from the combustion engine to electrical cars, because it will drive a lot of stuff. Because if you read the prognosis for where we are in 10 years, it will be electric cars all over the place. And there are a couple of reasons why this will happen. It's not so much that the car industry or Uber or everybody is really nice to the economy and do this stuff, because maintenance of those cars are much less expensive than combustion engine. They last much longer. Electric cars have about a 500,000 mile span before you do anything. And maintenance is really a matter of moving part within a car. In a combustion engine car, you have about 3,500 moving parts. In an electric car, you have 150. So basically on this one, you can extrapolate what the failure rate is in maintenance that you have in a car of this part. The other part that's happened in driving this is what's called networked mobility. Networked mobility is really an infrastructure that allows cars to talk with other cars, cars to talk with infrastructure, cars to talk with the cloud and other areas, which will actually enable a much better flow for traffic. So traffic management system will be totally different than what you need today because it knows about it. The areas also, if a car travels and can talk with another car, you really don't have to be in line of sight about the obstacle that can happen. A car could be on the other part of the hill and there's an accident. It will actually tell you, even if you're one mile away with your car, there's an accident and you can react immediately. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do this. So there's a lot of interesting components that's going on there. The other thing that I'm really excited about, because I hate to drive a car and sit on 26 or 270 for hours, is that all travel by car in the future will be recreational. Think about this. No stress. Cars will actually drive you, you a passenger. There are different modes of operation. I was in Berlin at a congress, and so they had different cars. They don't look like cars, they say mobility, they have pods. Some actually had a treadmill and a stationary bicycle in there so that you can order for your 30-minute commute to work out in the car while it drives you. Another one, a company called Next Future out of Italy, that does a very interesting concept of individual transportation plus public transportation. They create pods that actually can connect each other, the door opens, and the footprint of one of those cars is not bigger than a smart car, but it holds 8 people. 6 that can seat in there and 2 standing. And they can actually couple themselves, and when the door goes open, then people can walk across the different cars. So they can become a bus, or they can do individual driver. They also have a traffic management through the app. Then you say, okay, I'm sitting here, I actually would like to have a Starbucks, or in the evening I want to have a martini. You can key this in, and there comes the bar cart that attaches to this, and you walk in there, and you get your Starbucks, or your drink. The other part, for longer part, that is that they use actually for virtual reality and other parts. In Berlin, when I went in there, so you drive by some of the old buildings and you will actually see inside the car all the history of the building, all the parts that they tell you, because you don't have to hear anything. You can pay attention to this one. And so it will be a totally different, very relaxing way to drive. The other part is a lot of change will happen in this one, and that excites me so much because it is really the first major disruption that happened that will impact technology, environment, city planning, labor, jobs, and everything. So to live in an area that will be as really relevant as the steam engine when it came on, electricity. And so this one, autonomous mobility, will be the third one that will be very disruptive on a lot of areas that coming through. So one example is, where do cities or community make their money mainly? Gas taxes, a big chunk is parking tickets, traffic fines, and those areas. Guess about if you have all autonomous cars. They don't have accidents anymore. They don't need parking because they circulate and then they go back home in a parking garage somewhere in the suburbs. So all this money, tickets for traffic violation, parking tickets, all this stuff falls away. So the prediction is that communities will actually lose about $368 billion a year with autonomous mobility. So they are challenged to find new ways to make some money. And so there's cities like Helsinki in Finland are one of the major parts that do this. They say, we don't want like Google or Uber or other companies own the infrastructure in our city. So they build the broadband network out for the city and they rent it out to the companies. They have to pay them to utilize the broadband wireless network that the cars communicate and everything else to make the money. So there's a lot of exciting parts that's going on there. So what is the technology? There's a couple of those, like I mentioned, as a vehicle-to-vehicle communication that makes this possible. There's a reduced need for infrastructure. Think about this. Today, what's about 243 million cars in America because we drive so much individually your car. And if you're like me, your car sits and is not driven for 99% of the time. So you pay for this. So with a new part, is really car ownership will go away over 10 or 15 years. You don't really own the car anymore. You use shared cars that you call when you need them, that they drive as you need them. Through this one, it's actually the car, because in a car, autonomous cars will be more expensive than normal cars. So it will be between $70,000 and $100,000, the least expensive cars that you see, or parts. But having shared driver right, you can actually split the cost of the car over multiple users. That brings the cost dramatically down. The University of Austin did actually a research about this part, and they said that on average in Austin, if everything is autonomous mobility, you don't have to wait longer than 20 seconds for your part to arrive to bring you somewhere. And it would require much less cars on the road than you think about. Different number?
Three.
Five?
Five.
Okay. Let's say five. Are cities ready for autonomous mobility? And that's a big question, because normally our politicians are not very forward thinking. Because they're still doing infrastructure planning for old technology instead of looking forward what we need to do this. I mean, I follow up the whole system about getting a max line going from downtown Portland to Willowville, I don't know. It's down there. But for $1.5 billion, it seems like crazy. Because by the time it's done, if they would actually do a road for autonomous buses, for example, and use it Every company that's out there, from Google to somewhere else, will jump on the opportunity and work with the city to do this. And it will be much less expensive, and it would be something that is useful for the future, if you can use. So that's actually the biggest problem. And the other part is, in America, we have the problem cities are actually built for cars. Because in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, came in, I mean, people moved to the suburb, you have to drive your car to go there. There were zoning issues where industrial parts have to go in some place, you live there. In order to go to work, you have to drive a car. If you look at cities in Europe, another part, because they were actually established before cars came around, so you have living area, industrial area, and everything close together, so they didn't have this problem. But if I look now, what I see with my daughter, really, she doesn't want to drive a car. She's so used to Uber, Car2Go, to use a car hiring service, she doesn't want to. And there are studies out there in the meantime in America that millennials and others, they don't want to own a car anymore. That's about 50% less than older generations that drive a car. Because they want actually to spend the money on something different, instead of car ownership. So in all this part, if you look at this, the big winners will actually be the consumers of this area. Because you don't have to an outlay of money to buy mobility service. Because you only pay when you use it. And it will be much, much less expensive than what Uber's charging now, or what the taxi cab will cost you. And that's actually the prediction that everybody says, that movement will be much faster than anybody can foresee, because there's no hurdle that you have to overcome for people using this. There's no cash outlay, there's nothing that you have to do to really use mobility. So it will be much, much faster, and I would say, if you look at new car models that are coming out in the industry now, it's like 5-6 years of research and doing this stuff. For the new part, car technology becomes a commodity with the electric engine. So the progress will be technology progress, like you see with an iPhone or other part. It will be 2 years, 1 year time cycle when new things happen. So therefore, it will come much, much faster than anybody can predict. So the part that I mentioned of cities already, look at parking garages today. In Europe, they already have laws now in certain cities. You can't build parking garages underground anymore. Because with new cars coming, mobility, you can't convert them in something like condominiums, businesses, offices, because they're underground. So they say if you build parking garages, they have to be above ground, and the ramps have to be outside of the parking garage so that you have one floor that can be reused, and they also have different height requirements that you do this. So they're already planning and says, okay, if you need it now, what we want you to build is that it can be refurbished into condominiums, offices, and other parts. The other thing is that car companies like Audi, the latest models, Mercedes, BMW, they already are on levels, what's called level 3 autonomous driving. They can drive themselves. And the first parking garage in Boston is one where you actually drop your car off at the entrance and the car drives itself and find a spot in the parking house. So the good part is now, since nobody has to get out of the doors, you really can park those things like Tetra bricks one by one. You get twice as many cars in the same space, and when you come back, you get a phone, you get a code, and your car comes back down and meets you. So that's the first part where you actually don't have to build any new parking spaces in a city anymore. So, as I mentioned, there's a lot of revenue that needs to be recaptured by cities, and that's really where cities need to go and see this as an opportunity rather than another step and jump on there and say, how can we monetize? those new technologies. And there's a lot of services which are really based on digital communication, like traffic management and other areas where you charge companies for. So they really have to be very aggressive and progressive to do this. Let me check up on time. Okay. Maybe get one more number.
Three.
Okay. Essex. Okay. So there's a lot of talk about since your car will really be a robot. Because you're a passenger now, so a robot, and it was driven by algorithm to do this. The whole discussion is now in the whole AI world, besides the part of driving, is about ethical impact of those algorithms, what they do. And a lot of the discussion is about what is this actually? Is this based on first principles that you actually say defined rules what the algorithm can do that drives the car? Or should this actually be more like fuzzy logic, where you give something to the car and the algorithm makes a decision based on the data they have, based on other areas that are in there? So for this part, I believe that really ethical or moral decision making is based on three fundamental things, and that's actually how humans also do this. It's wisdom, perceptiveness, and self-perception. And if you go through this, like wisdom is really what you learned about the past, what other people been doing about this to learn this. If you look at self-driving cars, every car shares everything with any other cars that goes out there commonly. So they will have many more examples of issues in the past that happen, how they get solved, how they do this, than any human being ever can have. I mean, it's similar like Google started out with a search engine. They created billions of data points and used all of this one. And the same with the algorithm of the cars. As more data they have, as better they become. Perceptiveness, that's actually a big one. It's actually how you be aware about your surrounding and everything. And basically, if you look at the statistics about accidents, we are not very good at this one, as human beings. But an algorithm doesn't get really distracted by anything. Those cars will have 360 degrees awareness of everything that's going around them. So from this point, they're very better to really be aware what happened. If there's a child on the road, there's something else going out there. And if you've ever driven in a car, and so hopefully soon some of them will come to Portland, but if you go to areas like Pittsburgh, if you go to Arizona now, Utah is actually on the up front to do this, you can drive in those cars. And it's very interesting because they're aware about what's going on there. If they sit there and they see people on the side, they will actually stop because they intend that they will cross. And there's actually a nice car up there that project actually a crosswalk on the street as a sign for the people to be able to move. So it's a very interesting part. So they have much better perceptiveness than we have with texting and driving and all the other So self-possession is really about, okay, what you know that you do and really implement this properly or execute properly on this one. A car is a robot, as an autonomous car. So it will follow exactly the rule and not do anything else. It will make sure that it protects the people and protects the drivers or the occupants within the car, without regard if the car gets demolished or goes against the part. Where as human beings, we make different kinds of decisions in such situations. So they are much better. So overall, I believe actually that autonomous mobility will be a much better moral decision maker than anything a human being ever can do. Okay, so I believe we have 25 minutes. So maybe we should be open up for some questions.
How are the car companies?
How are the car companies reacting, and are some leading and are some way behind, and are some of them going to be nuked in the next 10 years?
Okay. It's very interesting, and if you look at this, the European car companies, they're already going in the like car-to-go reach now. They're already in the rental space of sharing cars to do this, they're experimenting this. The same as GM, Ford, they go in the same business to gain experience how this is to be in this part. And they have to actually transition themselves from a producer of goods to a service, where they actually maintain fleets, do that. So there's actually a study from BMW, they believe in 10 years from now, they will make more money through service than selling the actual product of a car. And the big difference is car companies actually would like, still with autonomous cars, to sell you an individual's autonomous car. Technology companies like Google, Baidu, all the others, they have a different view. They want you to use shared cars. And so there will be a different part, like I say, next future, the company that I really like in Italy, they will actually compete with car companies. And I believe there will actually be some car companies that we don't know, they might go under, because they're not really persistent to do this.
Okay. Yeah, before my question, a quick comment. I'm glad I was a teenager when I was a teenager. Where would we go to park? the population problem will be solved. My question is autonomous aircraft systems.
Yes. Okay, that's actually a good one. That's where Uber is betting very much to have autonomous flying taxis in the port. And I believe it will happen, but there's more legal challenging around there about the airspace where those things can fly. Because you always have a stalled airplane that comes down eventually, right? And you certainly don't want it to be over you in a low area. So, but for certain areas to go from point A to point B in the suburbs, it's absolutely possible. There will be drone businesses for delivery of certain packages. That will be a big part. The other thing is Amazon had the first part. I don't know if you've ever been in the Amazon store in Seattle. But you go in, but no checkout, you know anything, you key in your cart, and then they see you from your face with your cart number, you pick an item, and you go out and you're on your mobile device and say, okay, that's fine. And they use the same thing actually to develop delivery trucks, which are little pods with goods from Whole Foods that go through the neighborhood. And if you order something, they stop at your house, you have a code, you go out there, you key it, and you grab what you need. And you get billed for this. So there will be no human being involved anymore. So the goods actually come to you. And there will be a combination of flying drones that will be a part. But the majority of this will really happen through mobility that's on the ground, the first part. Okay.
Hans is going to stay after for a few minutes and take a couple questions. Hans, it's our privilege and pleasure to give a book to the library in your name. And this is called Driverless, Intelligent Cars and the Road Ahead.